All right, it's 1:15. I'm going to call the Tax Conference Committee on House File 991 to order. Senator Nelson, welcome.
Hello.
And so because we're on remote, we've been asked to do a roll call to make sure we have a quorum for the public. So with that, Mr. Peterson, if you would call the roll.
Chair Marquardt.
Marquardt present.
Marquardt present. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Davids present. Representative Herr.
Herr present.
Herr present. Representative Lislegaard is excused. Mm-hmm. Representative Joachim.
Present.
Joachim present. Chair Nelson.
Senator Nelson present.
Nelson present. Senator Bach.
Bach
present. Senator Miller.
Present.
Miller present. Senator Rust.
Present.
Rust present. Senator Weber. Senator Weber.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair.
I know that Senator Weber was in three conference committees today. Another one that he's on at 1 o'clock and one that he has a provision in. So it is, he will be here. I just can't speak to when.
Okay.
But he's doing his job, just not in the tax.
And I think, very good. So Mr. Peterson, go ahead and complete the roll.
Oh, that's eight members present, Chair Marquardt.
Very good. And I think Chair Nelson brings up a great point for the public, is that, you know, members are on several committees many times. And there's other conference committees going on. And so if a member isn't always present, it's probably because they're off to another committee or they have a bill up in a conference committee and so forth. So just for the public to recognize that. And I think I see Senator Weber coming on right now. So Senator Weber is in attendance. So members, also, and for the public, be sure to check the materials, like for today's meeting, that the Minnesota House of Representatives, you can go to committees and go to taxes and you can find the materials. And one handout that you will find is something that was requested by Senator Rest that looked at a comparison of what was in House File Number 3, the second special session, I think, House bill, and then what was enacted in the fifth special session, and then what is in House File 991, the House bill. So I think there's a handout there that you can look at that had been requested by Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
I was just expressing my appreciation.
Oh, very good. Thank you. So there's kind of three items on the agenda, I think, for today. Today, I think we're going to adopt an area of the public finance articles. And then the second thing we're going to look at, the local option sales taxes. And the third thing, the tax increment financing, and kind of look at kind of the rationale used when, like, the House determined what type of projects and that would be included in local option sales taxes, and also some of the differences in the tax increment financing. For the most part, on most of these, we're very, very close. But where the differences are, I think it's important that, you know, folks know kind of what was the rationale used from the House and the Senate when we put those bills together. So the first thing we have is the public finance article. And I first of all would like to call on staff, and maybe Mr. Klayman could answer this. Has the House and Senate staff been able to take a good look at Article 11, Sections 1 through 9 in the House, and in the Senate, Article 6, 1 through 9, to see if those are identical? Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Chair, House and Senate staff have conferred on this, and all the provisions are the same. There's one section where the ordering of a particular piece of text is different, but that's something that the reviser would have authority to change around anyway. So we consider all the provisions to be the same.
Very good. Thank you so much. So, Chair Nelson, do you have a motion to make?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would move that we adopt the public finance article, and I believe we'll adopt the House provision, and I don't have the exact, if you could repeat the article in the House side, please, what number
Madam
that is.
Chair, that would be House Article number 11, Sections 1 through 9.
Thank you. I move that we adopt House Article 11, Sections 1 through 9. This is the public finance sections. We went through it several days ago, and as Council confirmed, they're exactly the same language.
Thank you very much. Any discussion on that? And I would like to inform the public, since this is the first motion to adopt, that it takes three of the five conferees on each side, both the House and the Senate, three out of five from both sides, to adopt provisions. So I'm going to call for a vote on the Nelson motion. All those in favor say aye. And please unmute yourself temporarily. Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. House Article 11, Sections 1 through 9 are adopted. Thank you very much, Senator Nelson. So the next thing I'd like to go to then is to go to Chair Joachim to talk about the rationale that the Property Tax Division used this year when they were looking at local option sales taxes. And then if the Senate would also like to respond, and then we can go over kind of the differences in the various local option sales taxes that we have. So that would be all right, Senator Nelson. I'd like to call on Chair Joachim at this time. Chair Joachim.
Thank you. Members, you have a memo before you that was the basis of our discussion around the local option sales tax provisions in the House Property Tax Division. The memo gave a little bit of historical context and also went over the work that was done in 2019 in the statute that was changed. From 2011 to 2018 only, cities were required to have referendums on their local option sales tax proposals before bringing them to the legislature. In 2019, the statute was changed to require cities to bring their last proposals to the legislature for vetting before bringing the provision to their voters, as has been done in the past. Other requirements that were added in the 2019 statute were that there should be no more than five projects, that they'd be capital in nature, that the amount is listed for each of the projects, documentation of regional significance and benefits for those outside the taxing jurisdiction should be documented, and greater weight was given to multi-jurisdictional compacts. And there's also in the memo a kind of a safe harbor list as a guide for projects that are traditionally thought of as lost projects. So in the House Property Tax Division, we had two discussions on two separate committee hearings on the lost memo itself and what folks wanted to see or considered good projects. And then we had three entire committee hearings on the lost provisions with lots of testimony and discussion. And the House provisions that you see in the House tax bill are reflective of the projects the committee concluded fit the criteria of a lost proposal. Proposals that traditionally have access to other funding streams, proposals like that were exclusively road projects or sewer and water projects, were not included in our lost proposals because, as I said, they traditionally have access to other funding streams. And then, as noted on Monday, there were three proposals that were transitioned to LGA. These were projects that were much lower dollar amount that would have taken the taxing jurisdiction over 20 years to fund. The LGA appropriation has been increased so that no other jurisdictions would have their LGA decreased. And finally, I had a discussion personally with many of the cities and counties that were requesting proposals before putting the division report together. I was very clear with them about the guidelines that the House committee had set around water sewer and transportation projects, and that we were steering clear of those types of items. And then I also reached out to each of the individual legislators whose proposals were adjusted before we released the division report. So that's just kind of some laying the groundwork of all the work the House Property Tax Division did around the last proposals. It was really a continuation of the work that was done in 2019. And I don't know if you want to go to discussion, Chair Marquardt, or to walk through the provision.
Well, yeah, any questions for Chair Joachim or I don't know, Chair Nelson, if someone from the Senate wanted to talk a little bit about the local option sales tax on just kind of the general concept of that on the Senate side or?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sure, I'll be glad to talk about the Senate's approach to the local option sales taxes. As you know, those local option sales taxes can only be used for construction and rehabilitation of capital projects that have a clear and demonstrated use of regional benefit beyond the local jurisdiction. So that was the number one criteria. And then also, as you know, those local option sales tax dollars cannot be used for operations. And we also wanted to make sure that it's reasonable to expect that the local option sales tax dollars would generate enough to pay for the bonds. So those were the three criteria. And then just as a refresher for the public and those new on the tax committee, it has always been that obviously there must be that local resolution approving a local option sales tax proposal. And that is how, that is still the case. That is what must be started. And then chairs, you and I were sent the documentation from each of those local option sales tax proposals, the resolution documents about what the project was. Some sent in a little, some sent in a lot. And so that has stayed the same. There's one thing that has changed recently, and that is the timing of voter approval. Some of you will recall that prior to 2011, the legislature was required to approve the local sales tax proposals before they were put to the voters, much like it is today. But then in the 2011 first special session omnibus bill, that was modified so that local sales tax proposals must receive voter approval before the local government sought legislative authorization. And then I think perhaps Minority Leader Davids might have something to say about that. And then, as you recall, in the 2019 first special session omnibus bill, the bill was returned to the pre-2011. So this is the first year in some time that local units of government seeking those local option sales tax come to the legislature first. And so in the Minnesota Senate, we made sure that number one, there's a bill. We had to make sure there was a bill. So for every local option sales tax bill that was submitted, certainly we made sure that those documents from the local units of government were provided on time. And then as we looked at those projects and the staff looked at those projects, we made sure that the local option sales tax requirements were held, particularly those three instances that I mentioned about regional significance and making sure there was enough funding to pay for the bonds and, you know, disallowing sales tax use dollars for operations. And my directions to, we had 20 bills. We gave them all hearings the hearings were good hearings, and the instructions to the presenters were this, and they align with the thinking here. In this new sequence of events where they come to the legislature first, my thinking was to approve those local option sales taxes if they met all the requirements, and then count on the voters then to make the final approval at the polls. And it's up to the local units of government then to persuade their voters or encourage their voters why they should vote to increase their local option sales taxes. So that's the current situation where we are now, particularly about the sequence of when the referendum is. There's been good talk about maybe we need to change that. And that's something we could certainly consider next year. Is it better to have the referendum first and then have those projects that the voters have approved come up to the legislature? So certainly there has been a lot of discussion before my time as tax chair, when I was on as a tax committee member, and of course there's been much discussion since. So those are things we might consider in the future. But the Senate's approach has been, as long as all those requirements are met, then the legislature can authorize those local option sales taxes, but it's up obviously then to the local units of government to make the case to their voters about why they should vote to increase their taxes for the projects.
Thank you very much, Senator Nelson. And just to add on to Chair Joaquin, who did an excellent job. And you know, Senator Bach will remember this because he was the chair in the Senate of the Tax Committee. And I never can remember the exact year. It was either 2008 or 2009, and Ann Lucheski was the chair on the House side. We actually put like a 1 or 2 year moratorium that cities, counties could not even come forward with a local option sales tax. So I've never been a big fan, if you will, of the local option sales tax. And you know, part of the concern I've had is that it's kind of between the haves and the have-nots, is that, you know, you kind of got the economic wherewithal, you can kind of benefit, and if you don't, you're going to, you know, be at a disadvantage. I always was concerned that within rural Minnesota, it would create this disparity between those that had an economic base and those that didn't. And the other big concern I always had was that, you know, initially when local government aid was set up, you were prohibited from having local option sales taxes. That's why they have to come forward. And I'm concerned that the more we do on local option sales tax, the more it kind of cuts into the credibility of local government aid, which was supposed to be kind of this great tax base equalizer. And, you know, you could get to the point where do you stop? Do you allow local units of government to have a local option income tax? But I also understand the reality of the time. I mean, you know, folks are looking, and that's why kind of when you look at these capital projects, the House took a more narrow approach. And, you know, the old barometer in the House was that for a project to qualify as a capital project, it had to be taller than the tax or property tax division chairpersons. So, and then it would qualify. So, you know, we kind of didn't include roads. We didn't include sewer and water because kind of thought those are other areas of where there's other areas of funding for those type of things. So, I know, Chair Joaquin, you had your hand up if you wanted to add more. And then I see Senator Bach and Senator Rest.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. I forgot to also mention that just to have a fuller discussion, we also asked the cities to give us their last 5 years of net tax capacity as well as the levies that they did, because I agree with you, Chair Marquardt. It's kind of threading a fine needle to make sure that some of the provisions that you would normally fund with local government aid, flush a toilet, drive on a road, call a first responder, are taken care of with their net tax capacity, and that the local option sales tax is reserved for regional capital projects where folks that may not live in the city also get some benefit, regular benefit from them, not just kind of driving through. So just wanted to add that as well.
Thank you. Senator Bach, who was that tax chair that, I forget what year it was, Senator Bach. I don't know if you remember exactly, but
somewhere in that window, we were starting to get a flood of them.
Yes.
Trying to take a breather and get our arms around it. I still think we have the same problem. Cities are going to continue to come. Some cities are going to be big winners because they have a retail base, a neighboring community. And I just think of, like, for instance, in my district, Ely and Silver and Babbitt, 15 miles apart. Babbitt's got very little retail. It's a bedroom community to the mine. Ely's got a lot of retail. And so how do we balance that and not allow some cities to just run away and be able to hold their property taxes down? their only real revenue stream is their property taxes and their LDA. Start to get more disparities, and I'm still concerned about that as I was back when I was chair a decade ago.
Senator Bach, you're cutting out a little bit.
Well, I don't know why that would be.
That sounds good right there.
I'm just kind of generally concerned. I have a personal position in my district with my communities in my district. If you can't come to me with a resolution from the Chamber of Commerce in your community, I'm not going to introduce a bill. I do think the business community needs to be on board in these communities. I don't want to get stuck in a wedge in any of my communities between the business community and the city hall. So I make them try to get on the same page. And that's why Ely doesn't have one today. Although Ely could benefit from one, they've never been able to get the support of the business community, who are very important players in the community. I don't know where we go for sure from here, but we're creating a whole list of winners and losers in communities. And or whatever it is, but there's going to have to be some kind of an equalizer if we continue to optimize.
Senator Bach, we can't hear you right now, the last 5 seconds.
I don't know why that would be, but we're probably going to have a conversation, maybe some kind of a subcommittee or something to look at. What are we going to do for communities that just don't have the retail base, like Floodwood, right? Those communities that, Staples is another one of them, I guess. There's a lot of communities like that that just don't have the retail. And they shouldn't get left behind based on decisions we're making here at the Capitol. So I don't have a solution today, but I do think we got to continue to think about it. The Transportation Committee, you know, they booted it to the county commissioners and said, if you want 0.5% for roads, have at it. Some counties have done it and some haven't. But there's going to be growing pressure to try to figure out how do we help those communities that are left behind.
Yep. Thank you. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I recall at least one example, and maybe Ms. Pollack can recall it as well, where that situation that Senator Bach described was resolved by joining together those two communities so that the smaller, more residential community nevertheless could benefit from their next door neighbor that was more or less a retail center. So that particular challenge, I believe, can be overcome. I do get concerned about thinking that 20 years is too long to ask a community or retail center or whoever is coming forward with these provisions. That's the length of a bond. And they can go two ways. They can have the sales tax go away when they have raised enough money to pay it off, or after 20 years. And at that point, and this is something that really does need to be emphasized to the voters when they are presented with these projects one at a time and on a referendum, at that point, the project has to be paid for by the full faith and credit of the city, meaning it's on the backs of the property taxpayers. And they're the ones that need to be really alert, if you will, to whether the project is worth it or not. I'm also concerned that for three of these in the on the House provision, that you want to give them LGA instead of having them go through the process that all the others are going through. And it will be my taxpayers, the people who live in New Hope, who would pay that LGA for that project. If it's a a worthy project. It should be, you know, it can be in the bonding bill. It can be in the bonding bill. But I'm really opposed to giving them those cities LGA rather than asking them, just like all of the others, to go to the voters. And some of that LGA is not, you know, it's not just a matter of $50,000. It's a big sum. And they should be able, their voters should be able to look at it, make a judgment that this is not for us. And we're not going to make Senator Rest's constituents pay for it through their income taxes that would then come to us as an LGA appropriation. So I hope we don't go down that path again, not that we haven't done it before, but that we don't do it again, particularly when it is an LGA appropriation that's not just for a disaster. My constituents understand that, or some other kind of equalizer, but that's not what this is. This is paying for a project far away from New Hope, and it seems to me that I should be able to say to my taxpayers, no, you're not going to be asked to contribute your sales tax dollars, your income tax dollars to the business community, your statewide business tax dollars for a project in a community that's 150 miles away. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for bopping in and out of the committee meeting today. I'm triple booked today, and so
we understand.
Anyway, I just wanted to comment. I agree with what Senator Rest said concerning concern about the LGA being used. I think that using LGA in this manner, and I understand it has been done before, does tend to confuse the formula at the end of the day, and I've requested that there be a look at the formula to think about some for future years here as to what to do with that. I think that if we wind up giving cash to communities, we've done so basically through the bonding process, not necessarily issuing bonds, but cash payments at times if there are smaller amounts and what have you. Sometimes not such small amounts, but I am concerned about stepping into LGA and utilizing it for that purpose, and that's the comment I wish to make.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to say I understand the consternation, but the LGA was thought of very carefully for those projects as kind of that equalizer that Senator Bach was talking about for communities that don't have that tax base to create some really important projects for the region. One of them is a child care center with Floodwood. It is a little bit for some infrastructure projects, things that their tax base just can't handle, and frankly, we all pay into LGA. We all pay into LGA across the state because it does make our communities stronger. And some communities just need a little bit more help than others. So it just did not seem right to have, I believe it was either Warren or Staples that had a $2 million child care center, and to have them spend 20 years for their tax base paying it off when the child care center was going to serve a regional purpose for child care for those employed up there. So that was just our thought on that. More than happy to talk about it, and happy to hear Senator Weber's on board on looking at the LGA formula over the interim. I've been gathering some stakeholders together to take another run at it, because we do have some cities dropping off of it, and the formula is about time we did another little tweak to it to see how we can maintain that strong base of making sure that folks across the state, no matter where you are, can have those basic needs met. So.
Thank you. I'm going to go to Senator Nelson for the last word on this, and then I'm going to ask staff to go over the local option sales tax differences, the cities that have differences. So, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and committee members. There's been a good discussion on the interactions between LGA, local option sales taxes. I'll just say a couple things. I know we'll get to LGA later. Certainly, it is time that we look and see, is it still meeting the needs of today, not the needs of a decade ago? So I do appreciate the effort that we're making there to review our current LGA formulas. And then I did understand some of the concerns about some communities can raise local option sales taxes. Some don't have the commerce to do that. And, you know, we can, in some cases, look at things that have done before, like a good neighbor policy, so that some of those local option sales taxes could be used with some of the surrounding communities. That has been incredibly helpful. In similar things to that good neighbor policy have been helpful in the regional center in which I live, in Rochester. So that's part of the district, and the rest of the district are those very small rural towns and townships around there. But yet, I think we can look at innovative ways to make sure that regional centers and the surrounding communities that feed those regional centers through employees driving in every day are able to look at local option sales taxes and LGA in a little bit of an innovative way in how to perhaps share some of that commerce that is in the regional centers. I do share my conferee's concerns on what appears to be a departure in turning local option sales tax requests into LGA. So local government aid, I'm concerned about that. It's an ongoing cost to the state government, and I don't believe that it has the same amount of transparency and accountability as do those local option sales taxes. And so I do find that concerning. And I do have one question. Those three communities, Floodwood being one of them, and then the other two, perhaps Staples and Warren, my understanding is those three local communities did submit a request for local option sales taxes. And did they say, well, we really don't want this? We really want an LGA bump?
So I'll have Chair Joachim answer that.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Chair Nelson, no, they did not ask for an LGA bump. I looked at their net tax capacity, their levy limits, their ability to raise the taxes, and the length of time that they're going to have to do that, and decided LGA would be a better treatment. We've done it in the past. So that's how we got there.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you. And just a follow-up. Well, I'm concerned that we're overstepping what the local units of government have asked for and changing it. But how do you know that, you know, the LGA just goes into the general fund? So how do you know that the LGA would actually be dedicated to the projects that the local entity sought?
Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. We can add some belts and suspenders in the language if you'd like, if we go forward with this. I talked to all three communities, and they were very happy to have the LGA bump, and sure, they would be happy to figure out a way to have that language in there as well. So we can continue to work on that. But the reason why we picked those three cities is because they are their net tax capacity in their retail base is not there. And like I said, $2 million project for Warren for a child care center that's regional, that was going to take, I think their request was 25 years. Let me look here real quick. 0.5% for 20 years for $1.6 million. So an LGA bump just seemed to make a lot more sense.
So.
Yeah, Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate the conversation. Well, I dare say that every city would like an LGA bump. I think that's kind of a given. So I don't put a lot of stock into the reason being because they said they would like it. So I think the Senate has pretty much kind of registered its concern with this approach, and kind of stepping over the locals, and also then taking what they are asking for as a local responsibility and turning it into a responsibility for the entire state over a period of years. And so I think we're pretty clear that we have some concerns about this particular approach on these three projects.
Yeah, Senator Nelson, I think this is some excellent comments. I think it does come back to what Senator Bach says is, you know, as more and more of these cities come in for local option sales taxes, how are you going to kind of make it equal for these small, you know, the Floodwoods and the Staples and that do not have the retail base to do that? I mean, you're creating an inherent unfairness somehow. And so you're not going to be able to expect, I mean, you know, all of our, especially if we have rural districts, like I know you do, Senator, you've got all these small cities, and there's no way it would even be feasible or realistic for them to do a local option sales tax. I mean, it just, so how do we, and this is the bigger question we're not going to solve today, but I mean, how do you get that equalization? And so, Senator Nelson, I don't think you're going to have the last word on this, but you can come back and we can come back to you. But Senator Bach and Senator Ress, this has been excellent. So, Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the things I think worth considering is local effort, right? I mean, cities that have a lot of tax capacity, so I'm kind of looking at the runner that our Senate staff ran for me, and I mean, Floodwood's local tax rate is 172, and which is really high compared to the average. So right across the page, I'm looking at Roseville and Ramsey County, where I consider Marty's district, where I was for dinner last night. That's why I'm looking at Roseville. And theirs is 30. I mean, so it's kind of a maybe some criteria about local effort that you have to have a certain local effort on your property taxpayers in your community before you can ask for a local option sales tax. Duluth is also incredibly low. They're at 40, pretty darn low. Maybe there's a conversation about that. It's some kind of a local effort before people can come in and look to have other people pay for infrastructure in their community. So I think it adds to the mix.
Yeah, and in fact, I know Chair Joaquin did factor that in. It was one of her criteria. So Senator Rest.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, the history of this goes back a whole lot farther to the Perpich administration, where one of the reasons why he vetoed the omnibus tax bill one year when Democrats controlled both bodies was a provision that was going to allow local governments general authority to impose a sales tax. And the Governor Perpich, there was another really big reason too, but this was one of them. He said, no way. We are not going to let local governments do this without a lot of restrictions, requirements, and certainly getting the will of the people through a referendum. And we came back after that, and we've done it again and again, going back and forth and back and forth on criteria for allowing local sales taxes. There are some taxes, there are some states, of course, Iowa being one of them, that does indeed have a local income tax that supports their school system. But I think it really does behoove us to look very, very carefully any time after we have set general rules to allow for some sort of exception. And, of course, for some of these projects, if they're that important to them, they can levy for them. And it ultimately is a property tax payers' responsibility anyway, unless if the amount of dollars is not raised through the sales tax. It's a very challenging area of law, and we need to have so many balls in the air to come down on what the correct general statute should be. So I'm glad we're having this conversation and that the House is willing to listen to our hesitancies and if not objection, certainly our cautions.
I appreciate that.
Thank you very
Senator
much.
Bach, did you have another comment or something? Your hand was up. I might have cut you off too soon.
So. No, you didn't. But I was just thinking, looking at these low tax rates, the other reason I have that business support criteria in my district is last time I looked at the tax incident report, it wasn't the most recent one, business pay about 46% of all the sales tax in the state that's collected. They not enough people to come in their shop. I mean, they make a lot of purchases, so they pay a lot of sales. The business in a community, there ought to be broad support from the business community before you ask them to pay almost half of the bill for whatever improvement you want to make. But I'll get off my horse. I just think it needs more examining.
Thank you. Representative Joachim, and then to Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Chair. And it sounds like this is another project that we need to tackle again during the interim. And,
yeah.
And the tax capacity and the skin in the game that Senator Bach mentioned was something that was important to me, too. That is that and our prohibition on transportation and sewer projects was why the Cross Lake provision was not included. So thank you.
You bet. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, a very good discussion, and these are all of the folks who can really help facilitate this, I think, going forward. And I would just mention, I do believe that there is a way to continue to allow these local option sales taxes in a way that provides some equity as well. And what we tend to see a lot of this is around the regional centers. Those regional centers have the commerce for those local option sales taxes, but they also have the additional needs that are brought, that the additional commerce that comes into the regional centers brings. And I think there is a way that we can thoughtfully look at how to share some of that regional center local option sales tax in a way that benefits the communities that bring in those sales taxes. So it's a very important conversation as we go forward.
Thank you very much, and thank you everyone for that discussion. So now what I'd like to do is ask staff to go to the local option sales tax portion and primarily go over the differences that we have. So, Ms. Hagler, who am I going to call? Ms. Hagler, start with you, and then we can go from there.
Mr. Chair and members, today I'll be going through the new document that was sent out that's titled Local Tax Provisions, and it has a table of all of the provisions that note the differences written there, but as Chair Margaret indicated, Ms. Pollack and I will only be talking about the ones that we didn't talk about yesterday that are same or similar enough that there are no substantive differences. So the first provision would be the local lodging tax expiration date that's in the House only, and that starts on page 32 of the side-by-side, but is the first first row of the document. So this provision is extending the local lodging date that right now has an expiration of December 31, 2030, I believe, and it's instead instituting the expiration date to be a time at which the City Council determines that the amount from the tax.
Ms. Hagler, we missed that last point. You cut out a little bit again there. We missed that date from 2030 to what date?
It was from 2019 to 2030, the end of 2030. is what's currently in law. I'm going to try switching off my video.
Okay. Yeah. There's just, it's just every once in a while you kind of tail off a little bit. So.
Okay. And if it gets
maybe
too bad.
It could be on my end too.
And Mr. Chairman, you know, it would help if those of us, when we're not speaking, if we would cut off our video and mute ourselves, that I think that helps the reception when you have a group this big.
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, and just let me know, and if it gets too bad, I can just defer to Ms. Pollack.
Very good. Please.
Okay.
Thank you.
So the Plymouth Local Lodging will now expire at a time determined by the City Council when the amount collected is sufficient to pay off the bonds, any bonds that were issued before January 1, 2022. So the next provision is the Cloquet local sales tax. Crosslake local sales tax, and I'll have Ms. Pollack discuss that one.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, the Senate includes an authorization for the city of Crosslake for a biosolids treatment plant and two sewer service projects. The tax would expire at the earlier of 15 years or when sufficient funds have been raised. The legislature has authorized local sales taxes to be used for sewer projects in the past, you know, a handful of times. So I think that's it's a total of $6 million, $2 million for the biosolids treatment plant, $1.6 million for one of the sewer service areas, and then $2.4 million for the other.
Okay, Ms. Hagler?
Mr. Chair, moving on to the city of Edina, both House and Senate do authorize the tax for the 0.5%. On the House side, it authorizes the tax for the Fred Richards Park and Braemar Park developments. The Fred Richards Park would be $17.7 million, and the Braemar Park would be $21.6 million. And on the House side, it would have an expiration of 19 years, up to 19 years. And then Ms. Pollack will talk about the Senate provision.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair, members, the Senate provision on this is identical with regards to the Fred Richards and Braemar Park. The Senate authorizes also improvements to the Weber Woods Park for $2 million. And then the tax would expire a year later, 20 years as opposed to 19.
Very good. Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I am wondering if somebody could share their screen because I do not have that particular document, and I don't believe it was listed on our daily calendar.
Or if it is,
we'll find it. But is it possible to share that document as we go through that?
It's just a side-by-side, Senator Nelson.
There is a side, but there was one local tax provisions. It was in, let's see, which one would it be?
If we're going through the side-by-sides, just explain this. It's on the side-by-side. If it's on the local taxes side by side, which came in last evening, we just need to reference the document that we're referencing.
That's a great point. So is there any way we can put that document up on the screen to share?
Mr. Chair, I can give it a try.
Okay, Ms. Hagler, and it was attached to the invite, and I don't know what the heading was right now because I don't have that out, but... there we go. Fantastic. So thank you, Ms. Hagler. So we can go from there.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, where did we left off at Fergus Falls, I believe. So Fergus Falls, is substantively the same. However, both projects are the same. The tax is authorized for in both the House and the Senate for $13 million for an aquatic center construction and the D Lagoon improvement project. On the House side, the tax expires December 31, 2037. And then on the Senate side, it just expires 2039, December 31. So substantively, they're very similar. I'll just move into the next one, which would be the Floodwood. As the committee discussed, this in the House side is a $250,000 a year LGA appropriation for 5 years through 2026. And then I'll have Ms. Pollack explain the sales tax.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, the Senate authorizes a 0.5% sales tax in the city of Floodwood for its citywide street and infrastructure project for $1.25 million, expiring 25 years or as soon as sufficient funds have been raised.
All right, Ms. Hagler.
The next provision would be the Grand Rapids local sales tax for 1% on the House side only. And this project would be the reconstruction of the IRA Civic Center. And that tax would expire in 7 years and collect up to $5.9 million. Hermantown would be
the next. And I'm going to move. Senator Rest has a question. Senator Rest.
Thank you. Thank you. Three times in a row, finally get everything ready. I'm curious when, as these bills came in, for example, going back to the Fergus Falls one, I assume, and I don't have the bills that's introduced in front of us, that the language was identical because they were companions. And at some point, I think it would be instructive as we consider whether to approve these to find out why, for example, in the House, the tax would expire in 2037, and then in the Senate bill, it was 2039. Just those kinds of things, if there was some sort of rationale for them or that came about in the discussion in committee was a bit different. But, you know, for that one, if they think they can get it done in 2 years sooner, well, why not? You know, but I don't know the answer to that. But I see that's happening in a number of them. And Hermantown, for example, that we'll get to is 16 in the House and 20 in the Senate. I'm real curious about the why the numbers end up different and where the sweet spot is for these provisions, because I think we're going to adopt many of them, if not all, many at least. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator. No, thank you. That's an excellent question. I don't know if that is more technical or more political. So I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah.
If that's for Representative Joaquin or for Ms. Hagler or for Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair, I can answer
Hagler.
That.
Okay, Ms. Hagler.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, the Fergus Falls, I believe that the language was identical. However, there was an amendment requested by the city. There were originally three projects, and then when the bill was heard in committee, there was an amendment to remove one of the three projects. And I think on the House side, we just adjusted the expiration to account for that removal of that one project. And it may just have gotten lost on the Senate side. So that is why there's that two-year discrepancy between the two provisions.
So, Mr. Chairman, so just using that one again as an example. So Ms. Pollack, we don't, in this side-by-side, we don't, or in this document, we do not have the projects listed. But did we make the same adjustment to remove one of the projects? And was there testimony on that? And did they still ask for the other 2 years? Or I don't recall, but we'll have to make a decision one time or another. So we should start looking at what the differences were and the rationales.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, yes, we did have an amendment in committee to remove one of the Fergus Falls projects. The city did not request a corresponding reduction in the amount of time that the tax would be imposed, but it certainly would make sense to do that if the city, you know, would only want two of their three projects, and that one would reflect a two-year difference in the length of the time that the tax would be imposed.
Mr. Chairman, that kind of explanation leads me to, I'm going to put a check mark on the House side on that one, that you take a project off, doesn't need to be there that long, and that makes good sense to me, unless they object, or Ms. Pollack, maybe you have further information that might change my mind.
Mr. Chair, Senator, thank you. I guess I would only add on the just in addition to that example for Fergus Falls, I think where there is a difference in time of how long the tax would be imposed, it is because the Senate would authorize an additional project or two or three and so forth. And so that length of time corresponds to which of the projects that the Senate has approved, proposed in their bill.
But in this instance, the projects are the same.
Correct.
Okay. So I hold to favoring the Senate, the House provision when we get to that. So thank you for letting me get into the details, Mr. Chairman. I think it's important for all of us.
Thank you, Senator Rest. So Ms. Pollack and Ms. Hagler, as you kind of get to further ones, if you could explain the difference and why the years are different as far as the expiration as you move on to. So. All right, so Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair and members, getting to the Hermantown project, this tax would be authorized in the House side for two projects, the reconstruction of a hockey arena for $10.84 million and construction of the Herman Proctor Trail for $4.57 million. And this tax would expire 16 years because of there's one fewer project on the House side than there is on the Senate side. So I'll have Ms. Pollack explain that one project that's missing on the House side.
We'll go to Ms. Pollack, and then Representative Joachim has a question. But Ms. Pollack?
Mr. Chair, yes, the Senate authorizes the hockey arena project and the trail improvements, and then also authorizes the tax to be used for the Fichtner Park project, and accordingly would extend the tax for an additional 4 years for a total of 20 years.
Thank you. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt, and I would echo Senator Rest's concerns, too, about language in the House bill. We have the projects listed up separately, because it's required to have a separate ballot question, but in this language in Hermantown, the projects and the amounts aren't listed separately. So I was just wondering, did they just get you information late, or how that happened?
Is that a question for Ms. Pollack, or who are you asking that, Representative?
Oh, sorry, Mr. Chair, whoever can answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, I will look at the documentation that the city sent and can respond to you in just a moment.
Mr. Chair.
Very good. Representative Joaquin.
I do know that they did get us the amounts late as well, and then had them inverse, so we had to fix it, I think, in the tax committee. So I could understand why you might not have it in there, too.
Very good. So we'll, let's move on, and then we can come back to that, too. So Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair and members, the next one that we did not talk about yesterday was the Little Falls local sales tax at the bottom of the page. Would be a 0.5% tax for $17 million for construction of a community recreational facility. And this tax would expire up to 30 years. And the reason we didn't talk about it yesterday, because there's a small one sentence difference in subdivision one that describes that this new tax would be in addition to any other local taxes imposed under any other special law. And then there's also just a minor grammatical difference with the $17 million. This substantively, though, the House and the Senate bills are the same.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. The next project would be the Maple Grove local sales tax for 0.5% for the renovation of the Maple Grove Community Center. And this tax would expire the earlier of 20 years or when the allowed revenues are raised. And this is a House provision only. The next provision.
So
would be-
if I might ask, I see a couple of places. Maple Grove is one. And I think Grand Rapids was another where there's no Senate provision. So was that a Senate position or the bills were not heard? Or why is there no Senate provisions on those?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you. Regarding the Maple Grove, there was not a bill introduced, so we did not have a hearing. Regarding the Grand Rapids one, the bill came in very late, and I don't believe we had a hearing request. So we get a lot of bills. We try and hear them all, especially, you know, if they have hearing requests. And so those were the two that I recall that they just, for some reason, didn't, they didn't get a hearing because there either wasn't a bill or there wasn't a hearing request, or it came in too late.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Very good. Okay, Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair and members, we discussed the Mille Lacs sales tax yesterday. They are substantively the same. The Moorhead local sales tax is also substantively the same. However, the expirations are a little bit different. The House expires 22 years and the Senate expires 25 years. And this is for a 0.5% local sales tax for construction of a regional library and community center to raise $31.5 million. I believe the difference in the expiration also came from reduction of a project or reduction of the project amount. I can't quite remember. Maybe Ms. Pollack can shed some light on that.
Ms. Pollack, anything to add on the City of Moorhead?
Mr. Chair, no. I know that there were some discussions with the city as the bills were being heard. They had an updated resolution and some new calculations about the capital costs of their project. So I can certainly look and see if, but my recollection was that they did not request an additional or different amount of time period for the imposition of the tax than they had originally requested. But I will verify that.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, I think Ms. Pollack is correct that they amended their resolution after the first one, and that's where that came from. There were a lot of resolutions submitted.
Okay.
So the next one we'll talk about is the City of Oakdale. And this tax would also be a 0.5% tax for $37 million for construction of a public works facility and expansion of a police department. And this tax would expire up to 25 years. And this provision is substantively the same in the Senate There's just a little bit of wording differences when it comes to the bond language. So we look at that worked out with the reviser. The next one is the city of St. Cloud is 0.5% tax for on the house side would be $21.1 million for the expansion and improvements to the St. Cloud Municipal Athletic Complex. And this tax would expire in 5 years. And also because the Senate has a few more projects authorized, that is also why the discrepancy in expiration dates, and I'll just have Ms. Pollack describe the Senate projects for this one.
Ms. Pollack?
Mr. Chair, yes, as Ms. Hagler stated, the Senate authorizes the Municipal Athletic Complex project at the same amount, and then also would authorize the tax to be used for improvements to the East St. Germain Street corridor, Heatherwood Road, the St. Cloud University Gateway, and a business district gateway for the amounts that are specified in that side of the chart there. And then the length of imposition is in court accordingly increased to 20 years.
Thank you. Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair and members, we discussed the St. Peter provision yesterday, so I'll move down to Staples, and this is another that the committee just discussed a few moments ago, where on the House side, we're authorizing a $320,000 per year LGA allocation through fiscal 2022, or aids payable in 2022, rather than a local sales tax. So I'll let Ms. Pollack describe the sales tax on the Senate side.
Ms. Pollack. Well, Ms. Pollack, were you going to talk about the Staples?
Sorry, I didn't realize I was muted, Mr. Chair. Yes, the city of Staples, the Senate authorizes a 0.5% sales tax for a community center up to $1.6 million for 25 years.
Okay, Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair and members, we discussed the Wadena provision yesterday. So the last one on the list is the Waite Park provision. Second to last one on the list would be the Waite Park provision for a sales tax of 0.5% for up to $27.5 million for construction of a public safety facility and regional trail connections for up to 19 years. And there is one fewer project on the House side, so we'll have Ms. Pollack describe that remaining project.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair, the Senate would authorize an additional project, the 10th Avenue Corridor project, at $10 million, and then would accordingly increase the length of the tax to 25 years.
Ms. Hagler, last one.
Mr. Chair and members, the last one for the City of Warren.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question about Waite Park first?
You bet. Senator Rest.
Thank you. So, on a number of occasions, or at least a few, the House has one set of projects and the Senate has another. Was that, does that come about because of a policy difference, or the House thinks that these projects are really good, or did the the city of Waite Park withdraw one when they testified in the House? Was there a judgment made on the projects that the cities brought forward or not? Because I have heard from the city of Waite Park that says they prefer the Senate provision. So I'm just curious, at what point did these projects fall off? And then, of course, the very reasonable accommodation and adjustment of the length of the tax.
Well, Senator Rest, that was a policy decision. Most of the changes you see where there's a project that is included in the Senate that is not included on the House side was probably a street or a sewer or water project. And as, and maybe Chair Joachim can talk to more, but that was kind of one of the things when we were talking about capital projects, we just didn't think streets and sewer and water qualified because there's other ways to fund those. And, you know, there's formulas, there's FPFA and, mm-hmm. and so forth. And anyway, Chair Joachim, did you want to add to that?
So it wasn't the request of the city, and maybe Representative Joachim can give a statutory cite about why a project like that should not be requested.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rest, no, that was definitely a policy decision that the House spent a lot of time talking. As I said before, a memo went out. We spent two whole hearings discussing the memo and what projects would be considered capital. Statutory is vague as it is right now, but there is some set aside requirements on regional projects that it must be regional. But we kind of really honed in and took our vetting seriously since the legislature is supposed to vet the projects first and made the determination that sewer and transportation projects have other funding streams. So I was clear once we had done that work before we had the, as we had the bills up in committee, I had also talked to the representatives and the representatives from the cities and let them know that as well. So it was definitely very, a scalpel approach, and it was very transparent and very public.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Joachim, I know you didn't mean to imply that the Senate was not careful in its review in the property tax subcommittee and in the tax committee of these projects. You just used a different process than the Senate did, but we were as careful, I would submit, as the House. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair and members, the final provision on the list would be the City of Warrens provision, and as discussed in the House side, the House today, $320,000 per year LGA. Payment through fiscal or aids payable 2026 rather than a local sales tax. And Ms. Pollack can explain the local sales tax on the Senate side.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair, the City of Warren was authorized in the Senate bill to impose a 0.5% sales tax for a child care facility for a cost of $1.6 million for 20 years.
Ms. Hagler, Ms. Pollack, thank you so much for going through those differences on the local option sales taxes. And so, Chair Nelson, we have a little work yet to do on these, but that's good. So I want to move now to the TIF provisions and kind of set it up a little bit with talk about kind of what was the rationale, and there's some differences. So I want to, Senator Bach, before we go on.
Mr. Chairman, just on the tail end, it's probably too late to do a lot with these local options this year, but I was just looking, because I have the run on local tax rates, I was looking at it, you know, and not meaning to pick on Edina, right, but their tax rate's 24, and they need a local option. I mean, I don't understand why we wouldn't expect the property taxpayers to pay for stuff there. I mean, Maple Grove is like 31. I mean, they're incredibly low, and then you got cities – you know, a lot of them are in the 40s and 50s, 70s. You know, Floodwood's the outlier at 172, but we've got to get some criteria on local effort, I think. And I realize it's probably too late for this year, but I don't know. I'm just kind of troubled by, just like I was troubled back when I was chair, Mr. Chairman, I'm still troubled.
Yes, I remembered we were all troubled back a decade ago, Chair Bach, and you know, there isn't much in statute. It says it has to be regional in nature. It says it has to be a capital project. But it really doesn't get into, like what you're saying, what is the ability of, you know, folks to fund it through their own property taxes and so forth. So, yes, I think this is all still going to have to be discussed as we kind of look through all of this. And I know, Chair Joachim's talked about this. This was one of the questions that was asked when she was going through things, as, you know, what was the, basically, what's your wherewithal to be able to fund this with your property taxes versus having others. So, all right, we're going to move to, oh, I'm sorry, Senator Nelson.
Oh, yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to kind of recap, I do believe this was a good exercise, but again, the Senate direction was to look at all of those projects, if they fit the criteria that was already in place regarding ability to pay, regional significance, and not for operations. Then it was more of a local approach, which is allowing then really putting the onus on the locals to convince their taxpayers that they do want to raise those local option sales taxes. So it was a bit more of a locally determination as to which project should be in or which should not. But I do agree, obviously, is that there's more to do on this, but I do think it's important that we've had this discussion today. But and particularly about going forward, maybe a good neighbor policy or something that could be helpful in making sure those regional centers and the areas around them are able to benefit. So something we can consider going forward.
Yes, thank you. Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, some of these communities actually sell this to the public in the vote by saying, and one of the cities came to me this year, cities or counties, and said, hey, people that aren't residents of the city or county, they're going to pay 55% of the bill. So why wouldn't you vote for it and avoid the property taxes? So, I mean, they use the property tax issue as the wedge in order to tax people that aren't residents of the city or the county. So it's I don't know.
Senator Bach, you're not moving another two-year moratorium on local option sales tax. That's not what you're doing here, are you?
Not today.
Not today. All right. No, thank you. It's continuing discussion. Yep. No, you're exactly right. All right. We're going to move to tax increment financing. I'm going to turn it over to Chair Joachim again to talk about what the House did.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know I don't have to explain TIP very much to the folks in this room, but I'll just go over briefly with some base setting for those interested enough watching at home. But TIF, tax increment financing, is a tool to encourage redevelopment that would not otherwise happen, captures the increase in property tax increment to help finance the public infrastructure for the project or other items related to the project development, has a very strict but-for test that the development wouldn't occur without the TIF assistance or that the market value of the project utilizing TIF would be higher than one without utilizing it. Financing techniques are different upfront costs, either bond, interfund loans, or pay-as-you-go, which actually is one of the ones that's used the most. Different types of TIF districts you all know about, redevelopment, renewal, and renovation, economic development, housing, and soils. There's a five-year rule required the project to be completed within 5 years of when the TIF district certified. And if you haven't had a chance to check out the Office of the State Auditor's TIF report, we had them come in and talk in committee as base setting for us before we looked at TIF projects. But 85% of the TIF districts in the metro area are redevelopment or housing districts, and 75% of those same districts are in Greater Minnesota. TIF pooling is set in statute. That is how increment can be spent either in district or in the project area. One unique thing is that 25% of non-housing districts tax increment can be pooled with an increase to about 35% if that 10% is used for qualified affordable housing purposes, which one of those is affordable housing trust funds, which we'll discuss later. Currently, housing districts are in effect exempt from that percentage limits on pooling by statute, as long as they spend it on qualified housing projects. Cities frequently come to the legislature, as you all know, to alter their TIF districts because the project did not get off the ground as soon as expected or something in the market changed. From the same OSA report, in total, in end of 2019, there were 1,648 TIF districts, about 60% of them being in the metro, so they're pretty well spread across the state. About 10% of those districts reported having special laws as of 2019, so they've come to the legislature to ask for something different. But the most common of those differences is extending the five-year rule for certification or extending the duration of the TIF district. So in 2019, 66 districts were decertified. Redevelopment districts can last 25 years, but in the last 5 years, 63% of those decertified in 10 years. Housing districts can last 25 years, but in the last 5 years, 79% decertified in 11 years. So the extensions of the TIF districts aren't as important to a lot of the projects being fully fully done as actually taking that five-year rule and giving them the extension to the 10. So Representative Torkelson actually brought forward House File 1587 to extend the five-year rule to 10 years for redevelopment districts located outside the metro area. After some discussion, Representative Hertaus actually proposed extending that statewide as after we listened to the OSA report and saw that there were issues everywhere in the market, especially after COVID. And I'm worried that we're going to see more of that coming forward. We really don't know what the market's doing quite yet and the cost of construction material. I have a feeling if we don't give some leeway right now for that five-year extension in the next few years, we're going to be seeing a lot of legislation coming forward from cities because COVID has stalled some projects. And like I said, construction costs may be affecting others. Representative Fisher had a bill, House File 1736, with Senator Pratt being the Senate author to 2376. It was a comprehensive TIF bill brought forward by a bunch of the stakeholders, including the League of Minnesota Cities and Metro Cities, to provide more flexibility around TIF. They had flexibility in transferring excess increment for a year to their general fund, extended the five-year rule to a 10-year rule, and made the adjustments around the six-year rule as well, and increased flexibility around TIF increment and affordable housing trust funds. So there's a little ground setting for our discussion, and I'll turn it back to Chair Marquardt.
So thank you, Representative Joachim and Senator Nelson. I know you have some members on this on your conference side that have worked a lot also on tax increment financing. So
yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, particularly Senator Weber, our property tax subcommittee chair, spent an inordinate amount of time with the TIF proposals. And as did Senator Rest, both of them, I was involved in that too, but the two of them really did a wonderful job on setting up the, going through those projects and making sure that they met the guidelines or if there was an exception, what was the exception request. And I'm wondering, Mr. Chair, if perhaps Senator Weber may want to add anything to the discussion. Senator Weber, Mr. Chair.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Yes, we took a look at the projects that were in front of us. And I think the one thing that comes out in the end of the day regarding the projects that we have approved is that, and I'll say this not only as a state senator, but as an individual who was involved in local government for 16 years, 8 years as a council member, 8 years as mayor. Tax increment financing is probably one of the most important development tools that a community has. And I believe that we need to ensure that it continues to be used for truly development purposes. I did not provide for any transfers into general funds or housing trust funds in the Senate tax bill. The housing trust funds have a wide variety of expenditures that they can make, many of which are not tied to actual development. And also, if you allow money into a city general fund, you know, there are a variety of ways in which it could be spent. And I think we need to ensure, I'll call it the sanctity of the development element of TIF money. And And I don't want to see us lose that because too many communities are using it to subsidize other operations. And so we did not allow for any of those transfers of monies into general funds or housing trust funds this year. I think there were a few projects that have been somewhat perennial in nature that have been in front of the legislature before. This is my first year on the tax committee. However, there had been modifications made to their requests that put them in line with what the guidelines have been for the tax committee, and they were allowed to move forward this year. And so with that being said, I would turn it back to you, Chair Marquardt.
Thank you very much. So before we have staff go over differences, anyone else care to anything further on kind of TIF? I think we got a very good summaries from Representative Joachim and Senator Weber. Thank you so much. So let's go to, and if you can put the document up, staff, that would be great, but it would be this one, TIF provisions, conference committee, May 5th, 2021. Oh, I see. They're already, oh my, there we go. So Ms. Hagler, I think, you, and from the Senate side, is it Mr. Silvia? Well, Ms. Hagler, if you would please begin and go over the differences, or go over these, this sheet here, because I think most of them are differences.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll start with the general TIF provisions. If aside from this document, it also has the side-by-side page numbers if you want to follow along with the summary. But these are provisions that the House has in the bill that the Senate does not. And the first is called the temporary use of increment authorized. And it allows TIF authorities to transfer an obligated increment to a municipality's general fund or directly to a business that was impacted by COVID-19. And it will only be authorized for funds in excess of what's required to make bond payments or other financial obligations within 6 months of the transfer. And the transfers can only be made through the end of 2022. If a municipality were to transfer such increment, they would have to approve a spending plan and hold a public hearing to discuss the what the increment will be used for once it's transferred into the city's general fund. And as I said, it does have an expiration date of December 31, 2022. The next provision would be the expenditures outside of the district. And this one provision does a few different things. It does broadly expand what activities are considered to be in district for housing districts. And so first it allows increment generated by a housing district to be transferred to a housing trust fund to be used in conformity with the trust fund's policies. It also increases the percentage that can be elected to spend in the housing district from 10% to 25%. And then it expands the type of housing projects that the development can be used for to include owner-occupied affordable housing. Sections, the next two, the five-year rule extension and the six-year rule extension kind of go hand in hand there. As Chair Joachim kind of described, the five-year rule requires that development activity take place within the first 5 years of the city of the TIF district certification. And so provision three would extend the 5 years to 10 years permanently for any district certified in 2018 and beyond. And then the next section would also extend the correlating six-year rule by the 5 years to make it an 11-year rule. And then the last provision there, jumping ahead a little bit in the articles, but I'll have Mr. Silvia explain what that does on the Senate side.
Mr. Silvia.
Mr. Chair and members, the Senate Section 8 is an Affordable Housing Development Tax Assistance Report. And what this is doing is requesting that the Department of Revenue, in consultation with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, the Minnesota State Auditor, the League of Minnesota Cities, and the Association of Minnesota Counties, prepare a report on affordable housing projects that have been paid for either in whole or in part through tax increment financing or through the housing county or city local housing trust fund that members have discussed this morning. The report kind of is twofold. The first half is dedicated to tax increment financing, and it requires information concerning housing TIF districts that have been established over the last 5 years, and then detailed information concerning the projects that were financed in those housing trust, in those housing TIF districts, as well as any local income requirements or deviation from those requirements. It also requires that those districts, not limited to housing districts, but those tax increment financing districts that have elected under current law to increase pooling by that extra 10%, to provide information on the projects that were financed with that 10% extra pooling allowance. The second half of the report is dedicated to the housing trust funds, and it asks for an accounting of all authorized expenditures from each of the four housing trust fund allowable uses. And Mr. Chair, the report would be due to the legislature on January 31st, 2022.
Okay. Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair and members, moving down to the local TIF provisions, we discussed the Bloomington and Burnsville provisions yesterday, as they are the same in the House and the Senate. So I'll just go to the Fridley provision in the House bill that allows the city of Fridley to spend increment outside of the district on certain housing programs. And it also exempts this district on the from the 5 and 6 year rules. And it gives the city the authority to make these certain expenditures through 2023. Next would be the city of Minnetonka. And this would be one of the provisions in the House side that allows increment to be transferred to an affordable housing trust fund. And in this case, it would allow the use to be, allows the city to use increment from any redevelopment district in the city for owner-occupied and rental affordable housing projects, and then also permits the transfer to the Affordable Housing Trust Fund to be used for the trust fund's policies. And then, Mr. Chair, we did discuss Mountain Lake yesterday. And so on the next page, I'll have Mr. Sylvia describe the Ramsey provision.
So Chair Nelson, just looking at the cities, not any of the kind of other policy stuff, but on Fridley, Minnetonka, and then Richfield and St. Louis Park, I see there's no Senate provision. And we can get to the also ask Representative Joachim on Ramsey, why there's none on the House side for Ramsey. But is that policy, or the bills weren't heard, or any idea on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'm going to defer that question to our property tax chair, subcommittee chair Weber, to speak to those particular provisions or the lack thereof.
Yeah, you bet. So, Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we heard the bills. There again, it was this decision was made that we would not allow transfers into housing trust funds, and so that's the main reason that they are not included.
Thank you very much. And if I could ask Chair Joachim on the Ramsey one, where there's none on the House side, why was that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ramsey came in a little bit late, close to the deadline where we were putting things together. We got our division report out quite early over to taxes. So,
okay. So, So it was more of timing than policy decision. Okay, very good. Thank you much. Thank you, Senator Weber, for that, and Representative Joaquin. So, Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair, I can discuss Section 5, the City of Ramsey provision.
I'm sorry, Mr. Sylvia.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 5 of the Senate bill is a city-specific TIF authorization for a TIF district in the City of Ramsey, and this provision would extend the five-year rule by an additional five-year rule for TIF District Number 14. This specific TIF district was established in 2010 under special law. At that time, the legislation included a five-year extension of the five-year rule, and what Section 5 is doing is extending that five-year rule by an additional 5 years, and also that conforming or corresponding change to the six-year rule is also inserted, so that that rule would begin at the expiration of the five-year rule, or in this case, it would be the expiration of the 15-year rule.
Thank you. Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair and members, the next provision is the City of Richfield provision. This also will allow increment generated in any district in the city to be used for owner-occupied and rental affordable housing projects, and then allows up to 15% of increment generated from a redevelopment district in the city to be transferred to the housing trust fund in the city. So it is similar to the Minnetonka, however, it does have that 15% limitation. The next one would be the St. Louis Park provision that will allow any district in the city that has elected to increase the percentage of permitted expenditures outside the district for housing development to elect to also use those funds for projects such as low-income housing and low-income owner-occupied and rental projects as they're defined in the Internal Revenue Code of Section 42. And this provision will also allow the transfer of increment to the city's Affordable Housing Trust Fund. And Mr. Chair, the remainder of the provisions, Wayzata and Windham, were discussed yesterday as they are similar or the same.
Very good. Ms. Hagler, Mr. Sylvia, thank you so much for your good work on this. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It probably doesn't surprise anyone that I concur wholeheartedly with Senator Weber with regard to the Housing Trust Fund account transfers that we looked at extremely carefully, that law 462A.201, and concurred that there are any number of sources of funds from all over the place that can go into those trust fund accounts, and that the expenditures from those accounts with regard to low-income housing are just inappropriate for tax increment. I do take exception, actually, also to a couple of the provisions in our bill, and that is the Ramsey one, that five-year rule being extended to 15 years is inappropriate. One of the chair's bills that allows for duration extension of a district that has just was just certified in the last few years. Seems to me that Senator Weber, and I have told you this privately, that they should come back and not ask for an extension of a district, a duration extension of a district, before they've even really gotten going. And of course, we know that they will have to get them if that, you know, continues and is kept in, that they will have to get the okay from from the county and the school district. And I know that there are a lot of people, I mean, for the last 30 years, cities have been coming and asking to be able to use TIF for any number of purposes. We worked with them during times of during hard times. We've done things to accommodate the completion of a project, particularly during the Great Recession. And perhaps there is something that can be done there now, but certainly not extending the five-year rule to 10 years. That I think you'll find totally unacceptable to the Senate. There are other ways that we can be responsive with TIF that I'm certainly willing to look at with regard to the five-year rule and the and times that we find ourselves in with regard to the pandemic. We also get challenged all the time between how much should be able to be pooled, taking from one cash cow and propping up a project in another district that's not cash flowing very well, quite frankly, in terms of the value of the land that the taxes are levied against. So I think there are some places where there can be a meeting of minds on in some of these provisions, but I think Senator Weber expressed it best when he said that we really do need to look at the core purposes of tax increment financing, and it is to spur development and not to do things like provide rental assistance to tenants in low-income housing, that there are so many other, particularly right now, $2.6 billion coming into this state. All of the money that is coming into, as I understand it, from our council, that is coming into cities can certainly be funneled into housing trust fund accounts and increment, excess increment, or increment of any kind is just not necessary. So thank you for letting me express my opinions, and I look forward to further discussions.
Thank you, Senator. Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank Senator Rest, and I look forward to working with you on this because you probably know more about TIF. You've probably forgotten more about TIF than I know, so I'm looking to you as an expert on this as well. And more than happy to talk about limits around that five-year extension. I'm just really concerned about being able to give the it's just for redevelopment districts, the 5 to 10 year, because I really am concerned over the next few years what it's going to look like after COVID and projects that cities are trying to get off the ground right now. And I'd be willing to entertain limiting that, for just X amount of years, and then having it blink back off again. But trying to be a little proactive, especially for those districts in greater Minnesota that are struggling and may not have a lobbyist or even know to come down here to ask for an extension. So trying to thread that needle as well. Mr. Chair, I didn't know if you wanted me to talk a little bit about affordable housing trust funds right now, or
how could I respond first before
sure.
We go to that?
Yeah, no, that's fine. Senator Rest.
Well, yeah. I would say, and without trying to be immodest, that they do have me here. And we were very, very responsive during the Great Recession with regard to the difficulties that districts that had been certified just prior to the Great Recession. And then we didn't want to encourage a flood of certification of districts, but we wanted those that had been certified to be able to be successful. And we worked with League and other city interests at the time to come up with something that I think could be a good model for what we have now. And that was also done with at the encouragement of then Governor Pawlenty. So I think we can get a very broad bipartisan support on being sensitive to that, but still respecting the original purposes of tax increment, particularly with regard to redevelopment, which was to foster development in blighted areas where the private sector would not step foot but for help from local government. So I look forward to those discussions.
Thank you. So Chair Joaquin, yeah, why don't you give a update on the local housing trust funds, and then we'll, I think that pretty much will conclude our day. So Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And part of the calendar attachment, there was a document that kind of lays out local housing trust funds in Minnesota with kind of a 2020 update about where they're at that you can reference to. It in 2017, Minnesota clarified the law defining housing trust funds. It's 462C.16. Pre-2017, there had only been three cities that had established these, Red Wing, Minneapolis, and Hennepin County, or three communities. Now, 13 communities have established housing trust funds, from Alexandria to Red Wing, with 17 more communities considering implementing them. Like I said, the handout really describes the uses for housing trust funds as well as the sources of funding for them. And one of those sources does include, currently under statute, TIF pooling. So TIF pooling is that set-aside statute that we talked about. And 25%, and we also talked about how housing districts can already spend money on affordable housing, and how their percentage of limit on pooling isn't there. Like I said before, Representative Fisher's bill has a more comprehensive look at the housing trust funds, and then we have the three separate bills from St. Louis Park, Richfield, and Minnetonka that do similar things around housing trust funds, and it does require a report. And I maybe will talk offline with Senator Weber about the language that you have on a report in your bill, because I don't think it was a bill that was heard, so I didn't have a chance to really watch the discussion in the committee. So these funds are to be used for affordable rental or owner-occupied housing. All of these provisions, they really do provide some flexibility. TIF money is already spent on these projects, but it just provides a little bit more flexibility in our communities right now in a time of really a housing crunch. But look forward to the conversations, and I look forward to hearing more about Senator Weber's proposal, too.
Thank you so much, Representative Joaquin, for that and for your work today. Appreciate that very much. Members, I think that concludes our work. I think we've done a good job. We've adopted our first article of what will be many successful adoptions. And I thought we had excellent discussion today on local option sales taxes and tax increment financing districts. So something to contemplate into the future as we're trying to get kind of more and more of the no cost items settled and so forth. So Chair Nelson, any good words of wisdom or any thoughts for tomorrow?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Yes, well, we will meet tomorrow at 1 o'clock, same time, same place. And, you know, just to kind of continue the good discussions that we've had today, looking at those non-monetary provisions that we have and comparing, contrasting, I think it's important to know why the Senate did certain things and the House did not, or vice versa. And I think that's going to help us as we move forward. I am concerned about the calendar. We are racing to our constitutional deadline of May 17th. And I'm very much hopeful that we will get those global budget targets. I know that there was an offer made yesterday. We anticipate there will be a counteroffer, hopefully, today. But until we get those global budget targets, it is really very hard for us to continue on with the finances, which are so important. And that's really where some of our biggest differences are, quite frankly. The Senate has tax relief and the House has tax increases. And, you know, and so they're just different, not just in numbers, but in the movement that we're going to. And that's why we really need those that agreement from our leaders that will help us as we go forward on that side. But I do think it's important, Chair Marquardt, and I really appreciate what you've done today, really talking about the differences in local option sales taxes and TIF. And one of the things I will continue to go through some of those things tomorrow, those similar, sames and similars that don't cost money. And we might look at one of the energy district provisions as well. But also, Chair Marquardt and members, I think it would be helpful for the Senate perhaps to hear from the department on the department bill. That was in the House proposal. It wasn't in the Senate proposal. And so that's one of the things that I'll be asking for tomorrow with the department to make sure the Senate gets to get a good idea of what's in that department bill. So that will be one of the things that we go over tomorrow. And then I know we all will be rooting on our leaders to get to those global budget targets. So that's what we're looking at tomorrow, members.
That sounds very good. And just to add, you had talked about our bill raising revenue. It does. I want to be very clear. It also provides over $1 billion of tax cuts and aids to family workers and small businesses also. So with that, members, thank you for your work. Thank you, staff, for your work. And Senator Nelson will have the gavel tomorrow. And have a good evening. We are adjourned.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.